Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Educating Alaskans living in remote communities is a challenge. Though rich in cultural and community connections, smaller schools can be limited in teachers, students, and offerings. One idea is to bring rural students to regional or urban settings for short-term enrichment courses and experiences. We'll talk about a program that does just that. It's actually a school, and it's the Chugach School District's Voyage to Excellence. Another approach is to connect newly minted education grads from across the U.S. and Alaska with smaller communities for online and on-site tutoring. That's happening with the Lake and Peninsula School District, with about a dozen schools located out on the Alaska Peninsula. We'll split our hour in half today, talking with Bob Crumley, the superintendent of Chugach School District, for about the first half hour. Welcome, Bob. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And then in the second half of the show, we don't have folks from Lake and Penn School District in the studio. They're going to call in because they're pretty far away. We expect to hear from Rick Luthy, who is the chief operating officer, and two teachers out there, Kelsey White, and Kirsten Buckmaster. And these are folks who started with their online tutoring or their on-site tutoring and ended up becoming full-fledged teachers in that district. So that'll be interesting to hear from them. We invite listeners to visit our Alaska Public Media website for links to both districts and their unique programs. And we invite you to give us a call with your questions or ideas about education in rural Alaska. So to participate, give us a call at 550-8433 if you're in Anchorage. Or if you're outside Anchorage, we can take your call at 1-888-353-5752. And that's good statewide. And you can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right. So we're going to spend our first half hour talking about Chugach School District and the Voyage to Excellence program. And we're going to be guided there by Bob Crumley, who's the superintendent of the Chugach School District. And I think you've been there since 2005?
I did. That's when I started. I was in the Whittier School at that time, and through the years became the assistant superintendent and have been the superintendent for the past 10 years.
Okay. And I know you're from Montana, and I think you went to school at UAF maybe?
I completed my doctoral program at UAF, yes.
Yeah. So how did you land in Alaska? Was it education or was it job and then education after?
Well, I landed in education and in Alaska because of my youth, and it was a long-sorted story. we won't take time to, but it's all hinged upon that.
Was there a romance involved?
No, there wasn't. It's all hinged upon youth being our greatest natural asset in the future, mm-hmm. and my desire to play a key role in helping our youth become the future that we want them to become.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's challenging, whether you're in Alaska or whether you're in Nebraska or, you know,
sure.
Florida. Education's under really intense scrutiny. You know, there's critics, there's concerned parents, there's performance, there's changing performance standards. So it's a tough field to be in.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's why, first, I just want to thank you for highlighting the two programs you have today, because both of these are programs that are very innovative, and decision makers, lawmakers, the public at large wants more innovation and efficiency and effectiveness in education and public education. And here's two programs today that you're talking about that are great demonstrations of just that.
Right. One is older than the other. The Chugach School District's Voyage to Excellence is about 20 years old, right?
Sure.
So, and the online tutoring is, I think, maybe 6 or so years old, and we'll talk to those folks in more detail in the second half of the show. But let's go back to the beginnings of Voyage to Excellence. It sounded, from what I was able to read, that there was sort of a mini revolution in that school district. The students weren't doing well. The teachers weren't doing well. There were some performance measures that they were in a PowerPoint that I saw.
Sure.
I'm not going to cite them, but, you know, it's just like there was a great deal of disgruntlement. So what happened?
So, yeah, we began, and it was in the mid-90s, early 90s, mid-90s. The school board hired a new superintendent, Roger Sampson, at that time, and he made a commitment, a public commitment with the board, that we were going to change what we were doing. If we wanted different outcomes, we needed to have different processes.
Yeah.
And we went through about a 2.5-3 year input process with our communities, our business partners, and that input process led to it was phenomenal. The common sense questions that came from our community members, students, parents, et cetera, led to a new system, which we today call performance-based. Some call it competency-based. And a much more holistic education system than the industrial era traditional education system. And so we worked hard to embed all of that input into a new system that was centered on meeting the needs of every student rather than centered on adults managing students.
Right. Now, we have a caller, so I always like to reward them for calling in.
Please.
And get them on and get their questions answered. And we have, I'd like to welcome Clay to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Clay. You want to ask a question about Molly Hooch?
Oh, no. I was telling your reception person that I got after the Molly Hooch case was won in federal court, I got recruited by the BIA to come up and start the first Molly Hooch High School in 1971. And they had no idea what they wanted to do. They just knew they had to provide local education. And I'd been doing that kind of work down on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona before. And they let me pick where to do it. So I picked Savunga out on St. Lawrence Island because it was still one of the most traditional villages with hardly any snow machines and one ship a year coming in with supplies and shortwave radio communications.
Wow.
And it was great. We did my model was you can teach everything a kid needs to learn in school basically from what you have there in the village. You got seals and fish and birds for biology and science. You've got village populations for mathematics and social dynamics. And you can do skiing, you can do basketball, you can do, you know, I mean, there's just no end to what you can do. And then part of the model was at that time, and I think still, the number of kids who from villages who can't make it when they leave the villages and get swamped in the majority culture in Anchorage or Fairbanks or wherever it may be, the dropout rate and the failure rate and the expulsion rate was horrendous, and it still is. And so we did what you were talking about earlier, designed a model where we could set up in advance with Native families and white families in Anchorage a transitional short-term program where the kids would write letters to the families and we'd take pictures and send them and the families would write back and would be in contact with the Anchorage School District and tell them what the kids were interested in learning or what I thought they needed to learn and for a short period. And the first year model was to just bring the kids in for 2 weeks. And just because at least in the villages that we were working with, they'd never seen more than two or three or four white people at a time. They'd never been on a 737. They'd never seen a paved road. And so it was pretty overwhelming. And then we brought in a bunch of parents at the same time. We raised our own money, or we raised a share of our money anyway. I mean, the money was in the pilot program, but we'd show movies on bed sheets in the shop and sell popcorn and
Clay, I want to ask you: do you and Bob know each other? I mean, you might predate Bob. I think maybe the 70s
I think this was 1971.
Yeah, but I wanted to bring Bob back in and let him comment on that sort of. Is that what emerged with your sort of common sense parents and, you know, sort of, are you hearing things that resonate with what happened in Chugach School District?
Definitely. What Clay is talking about is something that we experienced and came bubbled up to the surface from all of our input processes. And the important part that we needed to tend to was to take that input and actually act on it, make it part of our formal educational system. The unique aspects of rural Alaska provide so many educational opportunities that others may never have an opportunity to see, or maybe pay big tourist dollars to get out there to see. And we wanted to take advantage of that and use that. At the same time, we knew that students had, and their families and the elders had some fears and anxiety about coming to urban areas. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to build a transition where they would feel comfortable and find success
which did. Which is this short term.
Which is the variable term aspect of our program.
I want to ask Clay, you know, because people had come out of the boarding school era, although there were good things that happened in some schools, there's a legacy of concern and worry, and even as budgets get tighter and tighter in our state, that we might be going back to something like that. Did you find that concern among, I'm sure you did, among families? Was it important that you were just, you know, doing short-term trips with the kids? And was that successful for those families?
Well, it was. I mean, the kids that I worked with back then are grandparents now. But, you know, I mean, it the model was great. And even on that first trip, which was only 2 weeks, we had, I know, like the first day that we had places for kids to stay. After, when we got in, I put everybody into a nice hotel where we'd have like four kids in a room. But I had to send two girls home the next day because they got so terrified and scared by this overwhelming white and crowded and urban environment. And sent one of the parents home with them, and, you know, we didn't want any kid to feel like this was a trap. This was something that they had to stay in for a semester or six weeks, right? I mean, they had to have a legitimate out, and two girls did it. And there were other kids that were scared, but when they saw that we let those two girls go home right away, they knew that we were on their side, and if they needed to leave, they could.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal.
Now, you're retired, I assume, now. Is that correct?
Well, I'm still doing other things, but...
But
no,
you're not teaching anymore.
I don't know what the hell retired means.
but you're not in a classroom anymore, and you're not out in Savunga anymore. But you know what I'd love to ask you? One more question is, you know, tell us about some of the kids that you taught and what they're doing today. It sounded like you came in at a transition time, moving away from boarding schools into sort of village school education. How have your kids done? Are you still in touch with people? Are there any, you know,
I'm going on to so many other things in my own life. I only see them once or twice a year AFN convention, actually, is the time when I catch up with some of them. But they're all involved. I mean, most of them are still in the village. Some of them are still carving. Others have moved on. The ones who've moved on, I hardly ever see.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I haven't done any formal follow up on them. But I do know that you can't overwhelm kids by subjecting them to a different culture for too long without adequate human backup and resources to deal with the fears and the problems that come up. I know that for certain. And another thing we did try to do, which we didn't get off the ground, and I heard you all talking about it a minute ago, was the reverse, where we've got some superb elders out there, so skilled in so many things, you know, survival things and trapping and hunting and making baskets and parkies and so try to do a reverse thing where you get some urban families that are willing to take a shot at sending a couple of their kids out to the village. And then to try to increase the appreciation, the hands-on appreciation for the values, the traditional values of Native cultures.
Well, Clay,
it's got to be a hands-on thing. I believe it has to be an experiential thing both ways.
You know, Clay, thank you so much. It's really interesting to hear from somebody who in the 70s was, you know, trying to start something and saw some success and that it resonates so well with what we're working on today. We've got other callers, and I'd like to move on and welcome Fran on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Fran.
Yeah, you know, I'm a mother of one of the original participants of Chugach School Systems program, and my son was so blessed. And to give the superintendent feedback, I did work with Roger Sampson. My son was in the homeschooling program. Chugach District is way ahead of the curve because they brought the kids in stages. They kept them in town. My son learned about finances. He learned how to apply for jobs, how to do college, job shadowing. I mean, I just want to hear about the Chugach program, and I want to give him feedback. My son is a physician assistant. Another man has a master's degree and is working for in the first program, the first group of kids. He's now working for Fish and Game as a major biologist in a upper-level program. Many of the Native kids have graduated from college, and this is all from the very first program that Chugach was organizing. And I cannot thank Roger Sampson and his following people for giving a great gift to the kids in Prince William Sound, because we had a large homeschooling community as well as villages, and the kids got to meet and appreciate cultures from all over. That's all I want to say.
Fran, thanks so much for the call. You know, there's so much negative news. There's so much criticism or, you know, bad results. It's really refreshing to hear someone who's so enthusiastic about the education that your kids got. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Bob, we're back.
Yes.
I love to bring the callers in, and they do. They brought good points.
In fact, I think I know Fran, and I remember her son. So.
Okay. Well, that's cool. anyway, we were talking about how revolutionary it was and how, you know, basically it was grim. And from that, and you were just starting to talk about a three-year process. So
sure.
Help us.
So we went through this process. We gathered all this input, and it was clear that we needed to build a holistic system where all content areas were equally important, not just the areas that the state tests, reading, writing, and math, but areas such as cultural awareness, areas such as personal and social skills, employability skills, career development. Those were equally important for success from our stakeholder input and our business partner input. And so we struggled with how are we going to teach and assess and give students meaningful experience and feedback on how they're performing in those areas. And so that's how the variable term Voyage to Excellence program, in the early days we called it the Anchorage House program, but through the years it became called Voyage to Excellence program. And like I mentioned earlier, we just a year or two became actually designated a school.
Mm-hmm. Within the district.
It's an official school.
So Voyage to Excellence is a school in the district. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Why don't you name your schools? It's Chenega.
Our schools are in Chenega Bay, Whittier, and Tetitlik. Those are our three brick-and-mortar schools in Prince William Sound. Mm-hmm. We have a large homeschool program, as Fran mentioned, and that's statewide. And
How many students, roughly?
Roughly about 250 students in our homeschool program, mm-hmm. A number up in the Fairbanks area. Anyway, they're scattered across the state.
And they don't come in.
They do at times. They'll come into our variable term residential school, just like our students from Chenega, Whittier, and Tetitlik.
Okay.
And then, so our fifth school is our variable term VTE school, or mm-hmm. Voyage to Excellence.
Academic or educational lingo.
Yeah.
But, you know, I looked at you have brochures, you have a lot on your website.
We do.
That people can sort of introduce themselves. It looks like a phase. Well, I don't want to move off of the standards based, because what I saw was there were 10 things.
10 that, content areas.
And it was everything from mathematics to cultural understanding to computer technology.
Yep, technology.
And then you drill down a little more and you see the report card for that. Mm-hmm. And then it had like just a whole lot of areas a student was assessed. And mm-hmm. and I think there was also this idea of, emerging, like if they really
sure.
weren't there yet, they were emerging. It wasn't that you got an F, but you were still
you're still working on it.
Yeah. Or competent, or I forget what the other
proficiency. Mm-hmm.
Proficiency. But it was really, you know, I'm a product of an education. Actually, I went to Catholic school because my parents are Catholic, and they just were sure that that's the only way to save their kids is to
sure.
send them to. But it was very traditional.
So what you're hinting at and talking about is a significant change
yeah.
where in the traditional model, time is the constant and learning is the variable.
Mm-hmm.
And school is 180 days. And in the traditional model, it's expected that all students will learn the same amount during that 180 days. And in our system, we reversed it. We said learning must be the constant. Time is the variable.
Hmm.
So students can advance from one level to another level. It might be 90 days. It might be 200 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of all humans. We don't all learn at the same pace, the same way. And so we wanted to honor that. It was just common sense input from our stakeholders that told us this.
Right. So kind of throwing out the clock.
Yeah.
And so people can move faster, or if they need more time, they can
have
take
more
the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And so that was the change of to a performance-based system. And then the other change was, let's be more holistic. Let's make sure all of these areas that you talked about and that I mentioned earlier are equally important, and make sure the message to our students is that they are equally important.
Mm-hmm.
And our employers, the business partners would continuously tell us, you know, we understand that reading, writing, and math are important. The state tests that. But equally important are people that can show up to work on time and have good customer service and
mm-hmm.
things, you know, things that they were firing people for because people couldn't show up to work on time and things like that. And they said, can you work on some life skills, employability skills? And so, again, we built that into our Voyage to Excellence program.
Mm-hmm.
And then we gave them, as Clay mentioned earlier, hands-on experience, real-life experience, so they could not only learn about it, but then practice it with our business partners here in Anchorage.
Right. I'm going to throw out our phone numbers one more time, but then I want to talk about the phasing. There's phases that I read about on your website, and it can start in 6th and 7th grade,
sure,
I think,
yep,
for a short term. But our numbers here in Anchorage are 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752, or you can shoot us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. In the studio with me right now, I have Bob Crumley, who's the superintendent of the Chugach School District. And, you know, education's in the news all the time, and often it's critical information or concern over standards or teaching to the test, or, you know, or you hear from the side of the employer that, gosh, these kids, they don't know how to work, they don't have a work ethic, they don't, you know, all kinds of concerns about our young people. And here's a program that came out of Prince William Sound, the Chugach School District, that really built it from the ground up. Here's a question for you. How did you negotiate with the state? Was there resistance from, you know, that is a, they have things they rely on that they trust, and here you're doing something completely different. Were the numbers low enough that it was like, you try something new, we want you to try something new? How did it work?
It was interesting in the beginning because our students weren't really in grades anymore. They weren't in first grade, second grade, third. And we didn't give letter grades, A's, B's, C's. And state reports require students be in grades, for example. And so we had to get a waiver from the state in the very beginning years to throw out the old traditional Carnegie unit idea and say, now time is the constant, learning is the variable. And since then, and a few other districts began to use the same model, that waiver was determined not necessary. So we don't have to go through that waiver any longer. And across the nation, you'll see they call it competency-based education. But this model of performance-based education is springing up mm-hmm. across the nation in different states.
Is this a way to think about it? Like, time in the seat doesn't always equate to knowing the material. And
exactly.
You know? So the idea that you graduate out of fifth grade because you sat in a seat for 9 months.
Right.
We recognize it does not work.
Well, you're just lying to the students, and you're setting them up for failure by
mm-hmm.
saying that they're prepared for the next level when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to be real and true and accurate and quit pretending and with the student, but also with their parents, and say, this is what they're performing. This is mm-hmm. their performance level. And we want to teach at the appropriate developmental level for that student in
mm-hmm.
all content areas.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the unintended consequences were very positive. When students saw that they were advancing at their own developmental rate, things like behavior issue, classroom management issues, those really trickled down to minimal issues.
Because some of that might just be boredom.
Exactly. When students are pushed to go too fast, they're gonna rebel. They're gonna react and get attention not
another
so.
Another way. Uh-huh.
And when students are told they need to work on things that they've already mastered, they're bored, and they're mm-hmm. they're going to become discipline problems. Mm-hmm. And so when you have students all at that right developmental level, and it's meaningful, and they're applying it in hands-on fashion, whatever that learning is, and they're integrating content from one content area to another in these thematic projects our mm-hmm. teachers teach, then those issues of behavior and management become such small issues mm-hmm. that lets us focus on instruction.
Let's talk about kids coming out the other end, you know, sort of basically graduating. I guess it's high school. Yes.
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, I've often heard discussions of, okay, well, everybody's headed for college, whether or not, you know, that everybody thinks that's what you need. And then, you know, there's the vocational core, but there's also this idea of being a good citizen, and where do you learn that? So let's talk a little bit about the results of the kids who've been through your program.
That's good to say. Yeah. Again, from our communities, from this initial input process, community service, giving back to your community, was identified as a content area just as important as math or science or personal and social skills. And so all of our students from kindergarten, preschool through graduation are constantly working on community, giving back to their community. They're doing mm-hmm. projects. Mm-hmm. While they're doing so, they're learning math or science or whatever else, but they're giving back. Our students, after they leave us, and we started a wall of graduates when I became superintendent, and so we have lists of all of our students and where they're at today and so forth. And it's very, very affirming to look at those lists and see where our students are today. When our students do graduate, another requirement I started when I became superintendent was that they would do a presentation to the school board about what they've learned and what their school-to-life plan is. And just mapping out that plan and knowing they have to sit in front of the school board and present that plan to the school board.
Mm. And these might not be people they don't know, because your board's pulled from...
From multiple communities,
yeah,
sure. And, and often it's by phone, because the kids are scattered all over the state, mm-hmm. Or Skype or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the students, just going through that activity of developing that plan and presenting it to a school board, gives them a great starting point. And we have some parameters in there, you know, what connections have you made? What scholarships have you applied for? What trade schools are you looking at? And have you filled out your FAFSA? And it really helps, give them a kind of a slingshot approach, mm-hmm. as some of our staff say.
What about colleges recognizing this performance-based, you know, do you ever have mm-hmm. any admissions officers going, well, I don't know, this is different?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
how does that work?
When we first started, we did. We got questions. And when we have a small district, so we didn't have a lot of volume of students to deal with on that topic. So we would get on the phone and talk to those admission
folks. You could do one-on-one.
Yeah, and we would walk them through what our report meant. And to a person, to a student, each time we sat down or we talked with those admissions officers, they were very appreciative that the information that we were providing was far more accurate about what that student knew and could do than a GPA mm-hmm. or an ACT mm-hmm. test or et cetera. And in some cases, we started to learn that our students, kind of a portfolio approach to a graduation transcript, became, I don't want to say preferential treatment, but they were given special attention.
And they were communicating well,
yes,
about what they knew.
And there was not one denial that I'm aware of to this day.
So you had kids go right from this performance-based standards right into four-year...
Oh, yeah. Humboldt, UCLA, Dartmouth. We've had them, UAA, UAF, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Local schools.
And then college and career, AVTAC, mm-hmm. a lot of focus on that too, because we know that, you know, the four-year traditional college isn't the right place for every student.
Right. And I feel like, boy, I don't know, for some reason people thought that was some sort of gold standard. And how many, you know, college grads never really sat down and thought about what they wanted to do? Now they've got a degree in something, but is it what they really wanted to
sure.
do? You know, so it almost feels like you've built in that discussion with them from an early age.
Right.
We are at our half hour,
okay.
And I just want, you know, I guess people could go to the Chugach School District website or Voyage to Excellence. You can see the different phases that are often. I saw EMT training or, you know, outdoor wilderness.
Culinary arts, construction,
yeah.
Small engine repair, snow sciences.
Yeah. So there's just a lot there, and a half an hour isn't really enough to really
sure.
to get it all in. We are going to take a break. In the second half hour, we're going to be talking with Lake and Penn District personnel, teachers, and a district administrator who's got kind of the overview. Now, this is another rural district. I think there's 13 or 14 schools on the Alaska Peninsula, and they have another innovative approach, which is to bring college graduates onto their campuses for on-site tutoring. So we're going to take a little break. I hope Bob's going to stick with us for a little while. If people have questions about, you know, the Chugach School District Voyage to Excellence, we still welcome those in the second half hour. Or, Bob, I invite you to, if you've got a good question for someone in Lake and Penn, you're
sure.
welcome to shoot it
Be
out there.
Be happy to stay, sure.
Okay. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska, where we have good news about education, which seems to be in the small proportions these days. Sometimes it feels like it doesn't get the headlines. Good news doesn't get the headlines. But we've spent the first half hour talking with Bob Crumley, superintendent from the Chugach School District, who has been the steward of a program that started 20 years ago, really created by community members in Prince William Sound, business leaders, and teachers trying to come up with something that would work better than what they had. And so they've got a 20-year history, and Bob and I chatted about that in the first half hour. But that is an innovative program that works for rural students by exposing them to soft life skills, to creating a plan to transition from, you know, high school to adulthood, you know, self-motivated learning, all kinds of things that were byproducts of that program. We're going to switch now to Lake and Penn School District, which has about 13 schools on the Alaska Peninsula. And I do invite you to come to alaskapublic.org. We've got some links there to the various programs we're talking about. There's a video there on alaskapublic.org at Hometown Alaska that introduces you to the tutoring program that has become something significant for Lake and Peninsula School District. So in this second half hour, we are expecting to hear from Kelsey White, who is a new teacher. And Kelsey, I think we've got you on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Great, Kelsey. Now, tell us your story. You are a first-year teacher. What's the name of your school?
I am currently working at Cockanock School.
And where is that? What do you see when you look out the window? What is your view?
It's right on Lake Illiamna. So it's right across the lake from Illiamna and New Haland.
Okay. And as I understand it, you and I chatted a little bit before the show, you were an online tutor at your university in Pennsylvania, right?
That's correct.
And you wanted to become a teacher, so you were matriculating through the education curriculum there?
Yeah, my goal before I graduated was I wanted a job, and I didn't want to become a substitute. And an opportunity came up at Kutztown University, And it was this online tutoring program, you know, rural Alaska. And I was like, oh, okay, let me check it out. And I got involved with it my junior year of college. And I tutored a student up here. She was a first grader, or actually she was a sixth grader. And then I tutored a second grader. And what it was is it's just like an online via Skype. There's like a whiteboard. It's called Blackboard Collaborate. And you can talk to them. You can type to them. You can see them. And you kind of teach them through mini lessons of different skills that their teacher wanted you to hit on. So that's kind of how I got started with the whole tutoring and then eventually leading up to a job.
And tell me what those early tutoring, I think the other day you said it was the first time was difficult, but then you sort of figured out how to communicate. Tell me a little bit about how you grew as a teacher. What did you learn from working remotely with these students?
Yeah, it was very difficult my first time around, and the second time was much easier after you learn certain techniques. But it really helps you as a teacher testing your skills on how to differentiate instruction, use creative and innovative ways to get your point across to the student, because you're not sitting right aside of them and you're not able to, you know, show them. You have to really keep their attention by being, you know, exciting. If you're boring, they're not going to hold the attention to the computer screen. So it really is a challenge. But once you get the hang of it and you take the time and build a relationship with the student, they start to open up and you really see improvements in the students' learning from the program.
Mm-hmm. So you did that your junior year and you did it again in your senior year?
Yes.
And then how did you sort of come closer to Alaska? I mean, that's one thing, doing it from, you were in Pennsylvania, I think, at Kutztown University, right? So how did you get closer to Alaska?
So through Kutztown, they had the online tutoring, and they partnered with Lake and Peninsula School District, and they had an opportunity where you could go through paper and pencil, you know, interview questions. And then from that, they picked a pool of people to get interviewed. And then from that, they pulled about four students to come up and travel to about three of the different school sites and visit for a 10-day period and kind of get a glimpse inside the school of what was going on. I got to meet some of the students that I tutored, which was really neat. And then that's kind of how I seen the area and what I was kind of teaching in, essentially. And I got to actually do that 2 years in a row. I got to do it my junior year, and then I got selected again for my senior year. And when I came up my senior year, I actually came to Kakanak, and Mr. Mace flew in, and he actually interviewed me on the spot, which I was not really prepared for, I guess you could say. And I got offered a teaching position here in Kakanak, and ever since I've been here, and I love it, and it's a great place to be.
Wow. And I believe you're 22, am I right?
Yes.
And this is your first full teaching job?
Yes, that's correct.
And I'm wondering whether your classmates back in Kutztown University, are they all teaching, or some of them still, are they subbing the thing you were afraid that you were going to get stuck with? What's going on with your old colleagues from college?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I was probably one of the first ones out of my group of teacher friends that got hired, because back in Pennsylvania, you know, they don't hire as quick as up here, you know, in Alaska. Which up here it's smart because they're snatching up the good teachers, as I like to put it.
Right.
And back home, I have a few friends that, maybe one or two, that got jobs outside of Pennsylvania. But I think only one of my friends got a teaching position inside Pennsylvania, and it's very, very difficult to get a job there. However, it was kind of one of those things. I didn't really want necessarily a job in Pennsylvania. I was looking for an adventure, and, it sticks in my mind. I think I talked to you before about this, that Mr. Mace, you know, during my interview said, "What do you want to tell your grandchildren you know, when you're older, you know, that you taught in Bush, Alaska, or that you taught in Pennsylvania. And it's kind of a no-brainer for me because I'm learning such, you know, so more techniques within my classroom, even like cultural-wise outside of school. And so it's something you can't put a price on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you one more question, and then I'm going to see if we can't bring in Rick Luthy, who is the chief operating officer, and maybe Kirsten Buckmaster, who's a teacher also, who ended up at Lake and Penn through tutoring, but not quite the same as you did. So here's my question. What's been hard about it for you? You're young. You're just out of college. You're in a really amazing place, but it might not be what you were picturing when you were still in school. So what's been the big challenge for you?
The really big challenge, I would say, is I'm really close with my family back home, and so they're about 4,000 miles away, and of course it is pricey to get into the bush, you know, so that's a big challenge, you know, to balance that. However, I think it's just mostly, you know, you really have to be close with the people you work with and the people in the community, because each community is different in our school district, and those people become your family, you know, and so having a close, tight relationship with them is really, really important. And so there are difficult times, you know. I remember the first day I got up here and I was unpacking my stuff, and I was sitting in my apartment and I started crying, going, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? You know, because it was just like the shock of, okay, I'm here. Yeah. I got to do this now, you know. But now it's kind of a no-brainer for me. I just love it. It's peaceful up here. I'm happy. And as much as I miss back home, this is a place in my life where I need to be right now.
Well, that's great. I'm going to see if we are able to have Kirsten Buckmaster on or whether we're still connecting with her. And while we're working on that, Kelsey, did you find yourself welcomed into the village? Was it easy to integrate in with the village?
Yeah, at first it was you could tell that there was a distinct gap. That I was a new person in town, and they weren't sure, you know, how I was going to fit in or if I was going to fit in, you know. And it was just a matter of, you know, I had to work to build their trust. I had to, you know, make myself available, make them feel that I'm someone, you know, safe, that I'm here to help. And probably towards around October, and especially when I came back here after Christmas, I felt much more welcomed into the community. I just feel, now I feel like I am part of the community. Mm-hmm. Just recently, you know, the community members and elders asked me if I would become an ETT, a first responder here in the village. And it was something that I was really surprised about, but you have to jump on those opportunities because they're opening up, you mm-hmm. know, a little part of mm-hmm. the community to you.
All right. Well, I'm going to say thank you. Please go ahead and hang on and listen, and I'm going to see if Kirsten Buckmaster is with us. Are you there, Kirsten?
I am here.
Hi. We didn't get to talk at all in advance, so I don't know a whole lot about you, but Ty Mace, who's the superintendent of the Lake and Penn School District, did tell me that you were first introduced to that district as an on-site tutor. So can you tell us a little bit about where you came from? Did you have experience before? You know, were you right out of college like Kelsey, or were you already teaching? And then what was that on-site tutoring like for you?
You bet. So I came from Oregon. I had worked for 3 years as a teacher's assistant in the schools down in Oregon, and I was in a graduate program to get my teaching certification at Western Oregon University. And Lake and Peninsula took a recruiting trip to Western Oregon, and I happened to sit in on their presentation, and I thought, wow, that's a neat opportunity. And so I applied to be an on-site tutor, which means they bring you to Alaska, pretty much all expenses paid. They expect you to tutor their students in their school to help get them ready for the tests and to pass their different level tests. And then you get 3 months, basically, to try out the school district and see how you like it. And they get to see if they like you. And eventually, I was offered a position to stay for the following year. So it was an awesome experience and just a really good way to kind of get my shoes wet in teaching in Bush, Alaska, before I had to commit to a year contract.
Where did you first work when you were in Alaska? Were you at Port Hyden?
Yes, Port Hyden, Meshick School in Port Hyden.
Okay, all right. And I want to invite Bob, if you have any insights here about the challenges of some of these teachers. You know, the thing that I'm excited about is that it benefited rural students, whether they were coming into an urban environment or folks were going out to them. But there's something here, too, about a district getting to see a teacher in action before hiring them. And if we have Rick Luthy online, maybe you can speak a little bit to that. And jump in, Bob, too, if you want. Rick, what's the advantage to the district having this tutoring program going on? Obviously, you get to see them in action, but has that proven to be very significant for you in the hiring?
Well, a lot of questions there, but I think there's a multitude of very positive things that come from this program. First of all and foremost, we concentrate with our tutors on preparing students for graduation. That's one of our prime responsibilities through this. When we still in the state of Alaska had the high stakes, the HSGQE test,
right,
a lot of their time was to prepare students for that, and students that had not been able to meet those standards for their retest. So as juniors and seniors, those students had somebody to help them and assist them to get ready for that test. We use our tutors a lot with students that we have targeted for needs areas like elementary students that are having problems in reading. We've seen our test scores over the last number of years improve. Our student data is showing a great deal of improvement. That is a very positive thing. The reality of it is in Bush, Alaska, well, in all of Alaska, we have turnover. Every year we have need to fill positions. When you can have someone come out and basically live in your communities for 12 weeks, you really truly get to know those individuals. You know their strengths, you know their weaknesses. And as important, they get to know you. They get to know what you're all about. And no matter how well we do in describing rural Alaska and our communities, there is just nothing in the world quite like being able to experience that firsthand. So if people take a job with us, they truly know what they're getting themselves into. And that's a wonderful way to begin.
Right. I it sounds like it. I mean, there's nothing like face-to-face contact. And, you know, I think you said something to me the other day when we were talking on the phone. You said that you would rather have an excellent teacher for 2 years than a mediocre teacher for 10 years. So sometimes that longevity is not an asset if the teacher isn't turned on and really, really working hard. So how long has Lake and Penn been doing this? And is it, I know you were doing it before the qualifying high school exit exam ended, but that's, 2 years ago, I think, now that that's gone. So how long have you been at it, and are you starting to hire these? It sounds like from talking to Kirsten and Kelsey that you're hiring them. So how's that going?
Well, it's one of the wonderful benefits of this program for our district. We're finishing up this year with our sixth full year of the program. We had an individual that really 7 years ago came on board as our first tutor, and he was in one of our sites. He's still working with us today, so he's finishing his sixth full year of employment under a contract. So in that 6 years, we've probably close to, I'm going to guess, 40% of all of our current teaching staff in our district have come through this program and are with us today. Now, that doesn't mean they've all been here that length of time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's very easy for somebody when we're interviewing down in the lower 48 to say, oh, I want to come to Alaska and I want to be there for a long time. Well, until people live it and experience it, when our folks come on board, they truly know what they're getting into. And not that everybody stays their career here, but they really understand the value and the need for staying 2 or 3 years to accomplish what they set out to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
So our commitment with folks is much more realistic and much more practical, I think, when people make that commitment.
Yeah. Rick, could you describe your district a little bit? I've seen information on the web. You've got about 12 or 13 schools on the Alaska Peninsula. They tend to be smaller schools. Just give us a feel for what your student population is like.
We stretch from Perryville in the south to Port Allsworth in the north. We are geographically the seventh largest school district in the United States by size. Of course, all seven are in Alaska, so but we cover a huge area, about the same size as the state of South Carolina. We have 13 communities that we serve, but we are very, in relation to a lot of other places, our school sites are fairly small. Our largest school right now is Port Allsworth, which has about 60 students. New Halen, which is down on Lake Ileana, also has a similar number of students. And we go down to sites right at 10. So we're about a total of about 330 students in the entire district.
And would you say, I mean, you probably have considered some of these variable term opportunities in rural areas, but how does the budgeting work out for bringing people up? Is that turning out to be cost effective for you?
Well, I don't know that I can answer just from a financial standpoint. I would say the answer, without giving you hard and fast figures, is yes, because we will not spend any district resources in going outside this year for recruitment. We will be able to meet all our needs for teaching staff for next year and never leave the state. But it's the intangibles that are so precious to us as far as this program goes. So when you put it all together, it is a struggle. And we've used grant money, we've used general fund money. In the beginning, we used some of the supplemental money that we were given. It's going to be a continual struggle to find the money to keep this program going on whatever level we'll be able to. But the district is very committed to continuing in one form or another, both the on-site tutoring and the online tutoring. So we want to bring folks up. We for sure want to keep our online tutoring program alive also.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Kremley's in the studio with me today. He's from Chugach School District. And he was, when you said it's the intangibles that mean so much to us, he was shaking his head yes. So I guess he understands exactly what you're dealing with. I wondered, is this a program that you think might grow? Do you think there are other districts, has anybody expressed interest, or has the state expressed interest? Are you delivering outcomes that make people want to add it to their sort of toolkit?
Well, we hope so. I mean, we think it's an idea that has served a lot of, it's caught fire in our district, and our folks really see the value in this and the goodness factor of this. We have shared this with a lot of other rural districts. I mean, Mr. Crumley and his district is a district we work very closely with on a lot of projects. A lot of things that determine whether a school or a district can participate, one of the limiting factors for some places is housing. We have been able to have the housing to bring tutors in, student teachers in, and folks to experience that. Some districts that's a challenge for. So it's almost on a school-by-school basis rather than a district-by-district basis.
Mm.
But I think there's a lot of interest. The universities in our state are starting to work very closely with us on this. And we hope to eventually, I mean, I'd like to see a day where we're not traveling to the lower 48 to find tutors and to find student teachers, but we can work with our universities to fill our needs right here. Now, that's a ways off because they don't produce enough folks, but that's still our goal.
Mm-hmm. I know I wanted to explain to people a little bit why there was this connection to Pennsylvania. It actually is a personal connection because Ty Mays, the superintendent of that Lake and Penn district, went to school there, I think, or has education connections there. And it's amazing how where the creative ideas can come from. But I also thought, you know, what about UAA? What about UAF? What about APU? You know, and he did say that students from Alaska are less excited about going into the bush than maybe students from outside of the state. I kind of got the idea of almost like a Peace Corps or VISTA volunteer, or you know, that adventurous spirit, right, when you get out of college, going to a place that is so novel and so different and so adventurous, that seems to be very appealing to students coming out of education programs in the lower 48, and a little less exciting for Alaskans because they live here and maybe they've been in those regions and they're looking for something else. So I don't know. I was sort of hopeful that hearing from these young teachers who were able to share with us today that might paint a picture for Alaska education students to, you know, think about it. So we have just a couple minutes left. Rick, I would say, is there anybody that you talked a little bit before the show about some principals that were with you or some brand new just arrived tutors in January? I don't know if they're with you there and want to jump in on the phone call or whether we should just kind of move on.
Well, I do have a couple of our current brand new tutors here in the room with me. I would be more than happy to put either one of them on the phone if you'd like to ask them the question about starting out here and what life is like.
Yeah.
Our principals had to go back into another meeting, but if you like, I will put Emily on the phone as a place to start, and you can talk. She's at Chignik Lake, which is one of our sites, and she can tell you what it's been like to start out here. And I think she's in probably week 7 or 8 of this experience.
All right. Well, I'd like to welcome Emily on, and we probably have about a minute, Emily, so we're going to be concise about it, but why don't you give me a sense of what it's been like to land in Chignik Lake and start tutoring?
It was kind of scary at first. Granted, I didn't fly in by myself. I had my host family, the principal and his wife and their two kids with me. So they made me feel very welcomed and at home, and they helped me unpack and put all my groceries away that I had with me. And then it was the waiting for the rest of your food to arrive, which was very different because in Pennsylvania, we're on all the time. If we need something, we go to the grocery store and we grab it. And that was impossible. I had to wait for the rest of my groceries to come. But the first day in my school was a little quiet. My kids were all very quiet. They didn't get to know me until a couple days afterwards. And then they really warmed up really quick. They were excited to come into my classroom. They started telling me fishing stories and all the rest of that. So very quickly, I felt very comfortable with these students and the village people and all the rest of that.
Well, Emily, I'm going to have to... I'm going to have to say thank you because we're really running out of time, but I'm so glad we got that sort of fresh input from somebody who's just arrived. And now I just have to say thank you, everyone, for participating. And I need to just give our listeners a little heads up on what's coming for them. So I want to thank Bob Crumley, the superintendent of Chugach School District, who is in our studio today. Thanks so much to Rick Luthy from Lake and Peninsula School District, Kelsey White, a first-year teacher in Kakanak School in Lake and Penn School District, Kirsten Buckmaster, also a teacher in Port Hyden. Next week, Charles Wolforth is back as your host on Hometown Alaska, this time interviewing UAA Chancellor Tom Case and Provost Sam Gingrich and Vice Chancellor of Administration Bill Spindle. Pat Yak is a Vice President of Public Media. Evan Erickson is our web editor and audio engineer. Happy spring to you all, and thanks for joining us today to talk about education in rural Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.